Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, here at the original Le Show Dome, seldom imitated, always duplicated, which means that my little two-week promo blitz for the release of Greed and Fear, my new soon-to-be Grammy-losing record, is now officially over. Just looking back, London first, and you probably have figured out that I have a certain affection for London at this by this point in time. But certain questions just will not go away. And they go deep to the nature of the special relationship between the United States and Great Britain, which has been frayed over the years, but still endures. And so one wonders. Now, we know that we have different standards for TV. I don't mean the programming. That's another story. Different technical standards for television. We have different technical standards for electricity, different plugs for electricity. Okay, I get all of that. I don't like it, but I get it. But when it comes to the fact that in the United States, to turn a light on or to turn electricity in a room on, if your circuits are designed that way, to be switched, you turn the switch up. And in Britain, you turn the switch down. We have to be able to solve this, or we are so screwed. Can we just get can President Obama convene a summit? That would help. Then, of course, to New York. And by now you know of my affection for New York City. But it just, the security in New York City office buildings, and I'm not going to characterize it, I'm just going to describe it. You stand in line, of course, because it's New York. You stand in line and present your ID to a sullen, well, you know, it's not a good job, a security person in the lobby, or as Ira Glass would call it, a lobby. And they go through some, you know, magic stuff, call somebody, or call nobody, you know, that's their business. And finally they say, okay, you're good, you're approved. And so you get into the elevator. One gets into the elevator, and now the new thing in New York is they've taken the buttons out of the elevators. There's some other way for the elevator to know where you're going, but it ain't you pressing a button in an elevator. But that's so space age. Anyway, you get up to your chosen floor, and there is another desk with another security person in the elevator lobby. Ira?
Elevator lobby?
Yeah. And you need to go through the whole thing again before you can get through the next locked door to the place where you had an appointment 14 minutes ago. So clearly the security in the lobby is just to affirm that you're safe enough to take an elevator ride, not to do anything else in the building. But that's good security. And I, as an adopted New Orleanian, I have to say the spectacle of the previous and current New York governor and a passel of New York congressmen skedaddling from office with allegations of scandal, the whiff of scandal in the air, just makes me feel so good as an adopted New Orleanian, as I say. Because for years, people were saying, why should we send any federal money down there to all that corruption? Well, beginning of this week, New York Times reported that the recession in New York City will be milder and shorter than expected because of all the federal money that came to save the banking system, which, you know, now is headquartered in New York after the banks bought up all the banks around the country. So our federal money did go to someplace with a heap of political corruption. It just happened to be New York. You're welcome. Hello, welcome to the show.
jacks are in the boxes, and the clowns have all gone to bed. You can hear happiness staggering on down the street, footprints dressed in red, and the wind whispers merry. A broom is drearily sweeping up the broken pieces of yesterday's life. Somewhere a queen is weeping, somewhere a king has no wife, and the wind cries Mary. Traffic lights turn blue tomorrow, shine the emptiness down on my bed. The tiny island, it sags down the street, 'cause the light that they leave there, and the wind screams Mary. It's old age, it's wisdom. Whispers, no, this will be the last. And the wind cries, Mary.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Toyota has for years... See, I'm one of those people who got those emails that said, is the federal government just cracking down on Toyota because it owns part of GM? Well, this may be part of the answer. Toyota has for years blocked access to data stored in devices similar to airline black boxes. I didn't even know they had those. I mean, I know the airlines had them, but you see what I'm saying? That could explain crashes blamed on sudden unintended acceleration. This according to an Associated Press review of lawsuits nationwide and interviews with auto crash experts. They didn't offer that at Career Day, did they? You could be an auto crash. The AP investigation found that Toyota has been inconsistent and sometimes even contradictory in revealing exactly what the devices record and don't record, including critical data about whether the brake or accelerator pedals were depressed at the time of a crash, and if so, whether they were on medic. By contrast, most other automakers routinely allow much more open access to information from their event data recorders, commonly known as EDRs. How can it be commonly known? I didn't even know they existed. Maybe I'm not common enough. AP also found that Toyota has frequently refused to provide key information sought by crash victims and survivors, uses proprietary software in its EDRs. Until this week, there was only a single laptop in the U.S. containing the software needed to read the data following a crash. Wow. Get me that laptop. Now. In some lawsuits, when pressed to provide recorder information, Toyota either settled or provided printouts with the key columns blank. Toyota's black box information is emerging as a critical legal issue. When Toyota was asked by the AP to explain exactly what its recorders do collect, a company statement said the devices record data from 5 seconds before until 2 seconds after an airbag is deployed. The statement said information is captured about vehicle speed, the accelerator's angle, gear shift position, whether the seatbelt was used, and the angle of the driver's seat. I regard that as intrusive, but okay. There was no initial mention of brakes, a key point in the sudden acceleration problem. When AP went back to Toyota to ask specifically about brake information, Toyota said its EDRs do record data on the brake's position and the anti-lock braking system, but that doesn't square with information obtained by attorneys in at least one crash lawsuit. So I guess Toyota's new slogan would be, moving forward, whether you want to or not. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Bet you haven't heard about this, unless you've been reading the Huffington Post. Four Islamists have been convicted by a court in Germany, a regular criminal court in Germany, of plotting to attack United States facilities in Germany. The men, two of whom were German-born converts to Islam, were given prison sentences of between 5 and 12 years. The judge said they had dreamed of, quote, mounting a second 9/11, unquote, by killing U.S. civilians and soldiers by bombing targets like Ramstein Air Base, or Ramstein. They were accused of operating as a German cell of the radical Al-Qaeda-linked group, the Islamic Jihad Union, which was responsible, according to the U.S., for coordinated bombings outside the U.S. and Israeli embassies in July 2004 in the Uzbek capital of Tashkent. Who, when he goes into a phone booth, comes out as Tashman. The two German converts to Islam were sentenced to 12 years in jail. Said the judge, if the accused had managed to do what they planned, it would have led to a monstrous bloodbath, primarily among U.S. Army personnel and also civilians. A Turkish citizen was given 11 years. A 25-year-old German of Turkish origin was sentenced to 5 years. During the 10-month trial, all four admitted to belonging to a terrorist organization, plotting murder and preparing explosive devices. The three of them renounced extremism and described their actions as a mistake. And repeating, this was a regular German criminal court. The men's movements were monitored around the clock for 9 months until it became clear they were planning to move their huge stores of hydrogen peroxide and an attack was imminent. Security services uncovered the plot in December 2006. They were described at their arrest as very dangerous terrorists with a profound hatred of U.S. citizens, acting on the orders of an international network. They were tried and convicted in a regular criminal court. That from the BBC. This also, because the new Iraq is being celebrated today on the day of its election. What's it like in the new Iraq? 6 years after the intense fighting began in the Iraqi town of Fallujah between U.S. forces and Sunni insurgents, there is a disturbingly large number of cases of birth defects in Fallujah. Less than 40 miles from Baghdad, can still be dangerous to get to. As a result, there's been no authoritative medical investigation, at least by any Western team, into the allegations that the weapons used by the Americans are causing the birth defects. The Iraqi government line is that there are only one or two extra cases of birth defects per year, compared with the national average. But in the impressive new Fallujah General Hospital built with American aid, thank us, the BBC found a pediatric specialist, Dr. Samira Al-Ani, who said that she saw two or three new birth defect cases every day. Most of them exhibited cardiac problems. I have nothing documented, she said, but I can tell you that year by year the number is increasing. I'm a doctor. I have to be scientific. I have nothing documented, but year by year it's increasing. She seemed, like other medical staff at the hospital, openly nervous about talking too freely about the problem. They were well aware that what they said went against the Iraqi government version, and BBC was told privately that the Iraqi authorities are anxious not to embarrass the Americans over the issue. It's impossible as a visitor, says the BBC correspondent, not to be struck by the terrible number of cases of birth defects in Fallujah. We'd heard many times that officials in Fallujah have warned women they should not have children. One photograph the BBC correspondent saw showed a newborn baby with three heads. While at the clinic, people kept arriving with children who were suffering major problems, a little girl with only one arm, several children who were paralyzed, another girl with a spinal condition so bad the correspondent asked his cameraman not to film her. The worst problems are to be found in the neighborhood of Al Julan, the heart of the resistance of the Americans, hit continuously by bombs and shells during the major offensives of April and September 2004. One house, three children, all under six, were suffering from birth defects. Two boys were partially paralyzed. Their sister clearly had serious brain damage. Like the other parents the BBC correspondent spoke to, their mother had no doubt that American attacks were responsible. There may well be a link with drinking water, especially in Al Julan. Once the fighting was over, the rubble from the town was bulldozed into the riverbank. Most people in the area get their water from the river. The true causes of the problem and the question of the effects of the weapons the American used can be resolved only by a proper independent inquiry by medical experts, and given the security situation in Fallujah, that will be difficult to carry out. But, you know, good election. Nice election. This from Global Security Newswire. It could take the Homeland Security Department another 2 years to ensure that all cargo is screened for weapons of mass destruction before being flown into the United States on passenger airplanes. Much longer than originally estimated. But please take off your shoes. The 2007 law the Democrats wrote as soon as they took over Congress required the TSA to ensure that all cargo aboard passenger flights is screened for WMD by August of this year. The deadline applies to flights originating inside the U.S. and those from other countries. But the deadline will be missed, says the TSA's acting director. She said the agency might be able to ensure that only 65% of cargo in international flights is screened. But, you know, that's the dangerous 65%. So TSA will meet the deadline for screening all cargo aboard passenger flights originating inside the United States. So you won't be carrying any WMDs aboard your flight. TSA officials have been saying since last year that meeting the August deadline most likely would be not possible. But the need for another 2 years is the longest estimate to be disclosed so far. The biggest challenge is getting cooperation of the governments of 20 countries where nearly 85% of all cargo comes from. I say nuke 'em. Sorry, I know. It sounds harsh. From McClatchy Papers, the U.S. Army's ability to train its forces is increasingly at risk because of the nation's protracted commitments to Iraq and Afghanistan. That's just from the general in charge of training, speaking to the Army's chief of staff. In a February 16th memo, General George Casey... In a February 16th memo to General Casey, General Martin Dempsey, the commander of U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, DRADOC, says the Army has lost thousands of uniformed trainers because of troop demands in Iraq and Afghanistan, has had to put junior officers in charge of some key training functions, and has delayed initial instruction for nearly 500 pilots because it doesn't have enough trainers. Only 30% of the instructors at Army training schools are in the military. The Army is increasingly dependent on outside contractors. Hello, Blackwater. We are behind in integrating lessons learned. Yeah, I'll say. Developing training and updating doctrine, Dempsey wrote in the memo, copy of which was obtained by McClatchy. We are undermanned in our efforts to design the future Army. The past Army we're pretty much caught up with. And it was the miracle that set Pope John Paul II on the road to sainthood and provided faithful followers with proof of his holy powers. This from the Guardian of London. But hopes that the former pope's canonization would be fast-tracked by Sister Marie Simone Pierre's recovery from Parkinson's disease have been set back. The French nun has had a relapse. Simone Pierre described 3 years ago how she regained her health after a night of prayer to the then recently deceased Polish Pope, who also suffered from Parkinson's, which is incurable. It's like a second birth, she said at the time. I feel like I've discovered a new body, new limbs. So, maybe a setback. The Vatican, whose Department for the Cause of Saints deals with canonizations and beatifications, has been under relentless pressure to speed up the progress of John Paul's sainthood. On the day of his funeral in 2005, there were unparalleled scenes in St. Peter's Square where the crowd took up a chant of Santo Subito, or Saint Straight Away. Odd name for a saint, but there you go. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hey, you know, it is clean, cheap, too safe to meter. What are you going to do? It's nuclear power. And I think it's causing that humming. Anyway, Dateline Santa Barbara, new potential sites for nuclear waste facilities could be located anywhere in the country in the wake of the decision to close Yucca Mountain, according to the Obama administration's top energy official. U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu says there are now a broad range of possibilities for developing a nuclear waste system that may or may not include a permanent storage facility. Hey, have it for a while at your place. Speaking to workers in Arlington, Chu spoke with reporters at the Wall Street Journal days after he filed a legal motion to withdraw the license application for Yucca Mountain. So that is dead. He says the government has a chance to start again, to do it rationally, and to make sure it doesn't get political from day one. Right up until, day two. Chu said he doesn't feel the scrapping of Yucca Mountain will put a chill on the nuclear industry that's looking to expand. He says he's concerned about where it can store waste. I think anyone who really knows about this should feel the way I do, which is that, quote, this is a solvable problem, unquote. Chu noted past criticisms of Yucca Mountain's susceptibility to earthquakes. There are other sites, he said, which we know have been geologically stable. Chu has been directed by President Obama to oversee a panel reviewing policies for managing the back end of the nuclear fuel cycle. That makes it sound manageable, the back end. It only lasts how long? Chu pointed to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that a nuclear waste repository must be certified as stable over a period of up to 1 million years. Some back end. I wish I had that box. Certainly in the case of Yucca Mountain, but for any other site that may store nuclear waste, Chu asked, how sure are we that nothing's going to happen over 1 million years? Yeah, that's why it's solvable. You just take out that 1 million year slide rule and figure it out. And hopes for a nuclear revival are running into new obstacles over a key element, money, says the Washington Post. A new approach for easing the cost of new multi-billion-dollar reactors, which can take years to complete, has provoked a backlash from big business customers unwilling to go along. Utilities have turned to state legislatures and regulators to help with their costs of building nuclear plants. This is the magic of the marketplace at work, ladies and gentlemen. In states such as Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina, utilities have won permission to charge customers for some of the cost of new reactors while they're still being built years before they ever supply electricity. This would save utilities a couple of billion dollars for each reactor. Reason enough, don't you think? Previously, utilities had to wait until power plants were in operation before raising rates. We tell people it's like paying off the interest on your credit card as you go along, says Suzanne Grant, a spokeswoman for Progress Energy. Yeah, but Suzanne, we've got the stuff we bought. See, that's why your simile fails, babe. And I babed you, I know that. Big business and other electricity users in those states aren't buying the argument. Instead, they're saying utilities are pawning off much of the project's liabilities on customers because bank lenders and investors will not take the risks. It's a terrible idea, says a consultant with a Georgia firm that advises companies on how to reduce electricity use, Jim Clarkson. He says, we've had decades of subsidies for nuclear plants and all sorts of preferential treatment. They still require loan guarantees because the smart money won't touch them. Unquote. But how about the dumb money? Oh, that's us. Got it. Clean, cheap, safe. To everything to meter. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a sad story. The Miss America pageant is homeless once more. The TLC network, which used to stand for the Learning Channel until they realized that is poison. The TLC network announced it's broken up with the pageant. Our three-year deal has concluded, and we have chosen not to renew, they said in a statement. The network declined to elaborate, because it's not a very elaborate network. The network did take credit for the pageant's slight ratings improvement, saying it was happy to have been part of the, quote, modernization and revitalization of the show. Quote, this year we delivered record ratings, besting any of its prior performance on cable. Previously on cable, it had been on Country Music Channel. Said Miss America organization chairman Sam Haskell, they're not dumping Miss America. They wanted Miss America. They just didn't want to pay the same number for it that they'd been paying. Okay. I'm not dumping my Toyota. I just want to pay a nickel. Revitalized and modernized, the Miss America pageant is homeless.
There she goes, Miss America, down the old TV drain. The dreams of cosmetic firms and shampoo makers, weight loss drugs and cookie bakers, must find a new home channel or face their own death panel. There she goes, Miss America, missing from your plasma screen. It's not a beauty contest anymore, so in the ratings it won't score. It's one of those doors that just had to close, curling the nation's toes, Miss America.
This is Le Show, and now... Sure, it's over, but it keeps going. News of the Olympic Movement. Scotland's tourism industry has been urged to target Londoners eager to leave the city during the 2012 Olympics. Senior figures at a major conference in Edinburgh were told that locals trying to avoid a, quote, packed, dirty, and nightmarish London, unquote, could bring an unprecedented boost to Scotland. Delegates heard estimates that some £300 million of economic benefit is expected to be displaced from London, including overseas journalists, visitors extending their stay either side of the games, and Londoners looking to get out of the city. Visit Scotland's chief executive, Philip Riddle, said the agency is aware the Olympics may be viewed as, quote, an irritant by people in London. And there were clear opportunities to promote Scotland as somewhere to, quote, get away from it all. Bernard Donoghue, head of corporate affairs at Visit Britain, said the Olympics offered a, quote, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the industry in Scotland. I am so there. Organizers of the 2012 Olympics will be hoping to emulate the street party atmosphere of Vancouver. London organizers have always promised a compact and atmospheric summer games as an antidote to the glitz of Beijing, which is estimated to have spent $59.5 billion on staging the 2008 Olympics. Experts say the security budget of almost $1 billion, the same as Vancouver, is hopelessly optimistic given that Britain will be a much bigger target after its support of U.S. military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. Other financial risks lie ahead, including a potential shortfall in the estimated sales revenue of the Olympic Village after the Games. Some lawmakers feel a lack of stadium tenants after the Games will result in venues lying empty at a cost of more than $300 million, and fears are mounting that regenerating the neighborhood will just result in gentrification, with affluent residents moving in and pushing locals out. Moving to safeguard company trademarks and stamp out ambush marketing to preserve the monopoly of official advertisers and the IOC are raising concerns among civil liberty groups. Police will have powers to enter private homes and seize posters and will be able to stop people carrying non-sponsor items to sporting events. Quote, I think there will be lots of people doing things completely innocently who are going to be caught by this, says one spokesperson for I don't know what. And finally, the windup of the Vancouver Organizing Committee, they didn't say who he was, began in earnest hours after the closing ceremony with the release of 300 of 1,500 full-time employees. The Organizing Committee has retained employee assistance professionals for those few who will have a hard time adjusting to being out of work. One of the learnings I was given from the very beginning when I started was to prepare your people for that sense of depression that might come on. That's a learning. That's from a Vancouver Executive Vice President of Human Resources. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen, it's a movement, and everybody needs one, every day. Wow, I'm exhausted just thinking about another Olympics. I don't know about you, but, you know, I just hope NBC gets the rights, because they make it so personal, so very, very, very personal. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yet another copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
The melting of glaciers is well documented, but when looking at the rate at which they've been retreating, a team of international researchers steps back and says, not so fast. This from Science Daily. Previous studies have largely overestimated mass loss from Alaskan glaciers over the past 40-plus years, according to Eric Schieffer, a Northern Arizona University geographer. The research team says that glacier melt in Alaska between 1962 and 2006 contributed about one-third less to sea level rise than previously estimated. Kind of good news, maybe. Science Daily also reports that a section of the Arctic Ocean seafloor that holds vast stores of frozen methane is showing signs of instability and widespread venting of the powerful greenhouse gas. According to an international research team led by University of Alaska Fairbanks scientists Natalia Shakhova and Igor Semilyetov. Thank you. The research results published in Science show the permafrost under the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, my favorite Arctic Shelf, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to point that out, long thought to be an impermeable barrier sealing in methane, is perforated and is leaking large amounts of methane into the atmosphere. Release of even a fraction of the methane stored in the shelf could trigger, oh my God, abrupt climate warming. Interesting. The amount of methane currently coming out of the East Arctic Shelf is, East Siberian Arctic Shelf, is comparable to the amount coming out of the entire world's oceans, says Shakhova. Subsea permafrost is losing its ability to be an impermeable cap. Methane is a greenhouse gas more than 30 times more potent than carbon dioxide. It's released from previously frozen soils. When the organic material stored in permafrost thaws, it begins to decompose and gradually releases methane. It's also stored in the seabed as methane gas or hydrates and then released as the subsea permafrost thaws. These can be larger and more abrupt than those that result from decomposition. I'm just listening to the buzz. The one of our concerns is that the subsea permafrost has been showing signs of deep stabilization already, Shakhova says. If it further destabilizes, the methane emissions may not be teragrams. It would be sufficiently larger, significantly larger. Okay, then. So it's good news and bad news. News of the warm. But it's news. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
How can I be sure in a world that's constantly changing? How can I be sure where I stand with you?
Maybe you're trying to use me, flying too high and confused.
in a world that's constantly changing, how can I be sure?
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, the President's Weekly Address. Now, from Washington, here's President Obama.
This week, our health care reform program reached an important milestone when we released what we hope is the final version of that all-important program. I noted the valuable ideas our Republican friends had brought to the table in our health care summit, and I included some of them in our final proposal. Now, it's time to get to the finish line. It won't be easy, but the American people didn't send us here just to do the easy stuff like bailouts and stimulus programs. And the key to getting this done is a new sense of bipartisanship. The conversations I've had this week, our Republican friends have brought to the table some good ideas on achieving our goal of better health coverage for all Americans. No, we're not starting over. But we have offered to start near the middle. One Republican idea was to go back and have five more sets of hearings in the Senate on health care, because of the way that process tends to bring clarity and light to the issue. I agree with that, and I'm asking the Senate leadership to schedule those hearings now. The sooner they start, the sooner I can sign landmark legislation that will bring measurable improvements to the lives of Americans this year. Another good idea our Republican friends brought to the table was to postpone the starting date of all parts of the bill until 2018. This would give everyone more time. What they do with it, of course, is a matter for individual choice, because that's the way our system works. I think that's a good idea, because it's both practical and realistic. And after all of the rhetoric of the past year, that's a change I can believe in. But changing the effective date of the bill can't wait. It has to be done now, before 2018 gets any sooner. Finally, our Republican friend suggested changing the name of the legislation from health care reform to health opportunity legislation for everyone. They argue that it better describes where we're going with this reform, and they say the initials don't spell out anything in particular. And I agree. But the time for delay is over. I'm asking the full Congress to vote on this name change this week. You sent me here to fight for reform. That's one battle I don't intend to lose. Although our Republican friends do have some good ideas about that, too. Thanks for listening.
The President's Weekly Speech. Funds for this coverage came from the Corporation for Potluck Broadcasting's Plugging into the Government Audio Feed Fund. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And this is back at Lachaux World Headquarters, ladies and gentlemen, where thousands of trees, we learn, might have to be removed along the Green River levees in the state of Washington from Kent to Tukwila because of a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers policy that states the roots of trees can damage the levees and need to be taken out. These are trees that were planted by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers last fall. Because, you know, you plant them, you pull them out, you plant them, you pull them out. You make money each way. If you want to learn more about them, I'm making a film called The Big Uneasy. We'll tell you not everything you need to know, but a heck of a lot. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The CEO of the Tennessee Hospitality Association is playing damage control, controversy over an email he forwarded but did not author. The email, through graphic images, draws an unflattering parallel between First Lady Michelle Obama and a chimpanzee. "I'm sorry I did that," Walt Baker said. "I want to apologize to the people of Tennessee and to anybody that has either seen or been affected by this email." The publisher of a Texas newspaper that ran a column equating Canada's patriotic Olympic fervor with Nazi-era Germany has apologized. Gary Wartell of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram said, although he believes in great flexibility in terms of what opinion writers can say, sports columnist Gil LeBreton went too far by equating Canadians' flag-waving festivities with Germany having swastikas everywhere during the 36 Olympics. As publisher of the Star-Telegram, I apologize to readers and all Canadians who were defended by Sports Columnist Gilda Breton's insensitive comparison. Some have accepted the apologies, others have not. I want to personally say I'm sorry the column appeared in my newspaper, and I know LeBreton sincerely regrets his comments. I, like many Americans, have strong ties to Canada. Oh, I was born in Canada. All right, then. That's why you apologize. Get it. Texas A&M Commerce Athletic Director Carlton Cooper apologized this week, saying he was very disappointed with members of the school's football program over an error in judgment. On the morning of February 25th, some of the players took all of the school newspapers out of the racks around campus because the lead story on the front page was about two football players who had been arrested in a campus drug bust. Revenue lost to the newspaper, about $1,100. Denny's Restaurants has apologized for its commercial joking about the Irish potato famine. The spot, promoting an all-you-can-eat French fries and pancakes offer, drew plenty of complaints and threats of protest by Irish Americans, saying it made light of the 19th century famine that left more than a million people dead. The ad began running last week and it portrayed the offer as a celebration of the 150th anniversary of the famine. It's cute. It is certainly not the intention of the company to offend anyone or any group, and we apologize if this spot has in any way, said management for Denny's. You know, their food offends me. Can I say that? The principal of a South Los Angeles elementary school has apologized after some children carried photos of O.J. Simpson, RuPaul, and Dennis Rodman in a parade celebrating Black History Month. Quote, unfortunately, questionable decisions were made in the selection of noteworthy African-American role models, said Lorraine Abner. As the principal, I offer my apology for these errors in judgment. RuPaul had no... She didn't say that. Dateline Columbia, Missouri. Two students on Friday apologized for scattering cotton balls outside the Black Culture Center on the University of Missouri campus in Columbia. They used inexcusable judgment, according to a joint statement issued by their attorneys. A spokesman for the Oakland Police Department apologized to the family of an 8-year-old girl who escaped a kidnapping attempt, saying the department's hour-long response time was outrageous. We are upset with how he responded to this incident, Officer Jeff Thomason said. We weren't there for this family. The chauffeur who claimed Naomi Campbell hit him while they were driving through New York on Tuesday has withdrawn his complaint, saying he overreacted during an argument with the British supermodel. CNN's Wolf Blitzer has apologized for CNN's use of the text Department of Jihad? Used to tease a story about a video produced by Liz Cheney's group on Thursday's program and seen around the world. A Louisiana man shot by Lee Boyd Malvo, one of the D.C. snipers before the criminal spree that terrorized Washington, D.C., has received a letter of apology from the convicted sniper. The Los Angeles Police Department has apologized to the family of Robert Kennedy for exhibiting the shirt, tie, and jacket the senator wore when he was assassinated in 1968. And Iran's deputy foreign minister has officially apologized for intercepting a Kyrgyz passenger plane in Iranian airspace. And Toyota has apologized again. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. There are now questions as to whether there will be a double dip in the recession because of a commercial real estate bubble yet to burst. So apparently the story continues.
Gather round, children, sit right here. Gonna tell you a story about what we see. A little bit greed, a little bit fear. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. A few years back we were making a mint. The only thing that scared us was reading fine print. Greed was king, bling was queen. Automatic was the setting on the wealth machine. Automatic was the setting on the wealth machine. Could flip your house, you could flip the whole street, you could flip the ass off of anyone you'd meet. Flipping was tripping, stocks were gold. Watch TV for a day, you'd have the thing down cold. Watch TV for a day, you got that thing down cold. Credit was easy, they sent you cards in the mail. Get a home mortgage while sitting in jail. Wi-Fi was sweet, refi was sweeter. Death-defying finance was the greed repeater. Death-defying finance was the greed repeater. right here. Gonna tell you a story about the economy. A little bit greed, a little bit fear. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. That sleepy old bank thinks it's got game. Acting like a player, tired of being tame. Selling off mortgages, buying back a slice. But hedging its bet at a fraction of the price. Hedging its bet at a fraction of the price. Bankers and brokers, they were itching to merge. In the middle of a binge, who thinks about the purge? The money went round till it circled the globe. Single probe. Nobody asked for one damn probe. Maybe you had a friend of a friend. Got you in a deal with profits no end. Guy was kind of secret. The fund was kind of hush. All you knew was that it made you feel so flush. All you knew was that it made your world so plush. Fear was in the backseat, maybe the trunk. Everyone knew how to make gold out of junk. Who could have known? Who could have seen? It was snake oil lubricated the wealth machine. Snake oil lubricated the wealth machine. Gather round, children, sit right here. Tell you a story about what we see. A little bit greed, a little bit fear. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. We were cruising at 90, then we ran out of gas. Someone pulled the handbrake, the tires they glass. Your house is worth less than your 60-inch screen. Upside down, underwater, living the dream. Upside down, underwater, living the dream. The numbers are scary, the opinions are worse. The wealth machine turns out to look a lot like a hearse. Bankers are begging, beggars are sore. The going out of business sale has emptied the store. Sailors emptied the store. The only greed's in the vultures buying houses for dimes. Fear's in the driver's seat. Fear writes the rhymes. Fear doesn't strike out. It hits a grand slam. Fear is the reality. Greed is the scam. Fear is the reality. Greed is the scam. Gather round, children. Sit right here. Gonna tell you a story about what we see. Little bit greed, little bit fear. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. How it tastes all depends on the recipe. They're telling us to balance the greed and the fear. Stocks are now a bargain, happy days are here. Truth is more elusive than a well-paying job. You can't have my behavior unless you've got a mob. No, you can't have my behavior unless you're a mob.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant, the planet, WBCQ. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of the internet, on your computer, whenever you want it, at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at Audible.com, and available as a free podcast with truncated music at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like us all agreeing which direction is on. If you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, always available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. You can catch me on Twitter at LeTwits. And remember, it's an honor just to almost be nominated. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. Wolf, around the world, as the home of the homeless.